PPI.org.
Welcome to American Indian Month on KFAI. And so today I am one of your hosts, Alfred Walking Bull. I'm here in the studio and we're going now live to our assemble party. Melissa Olson, our co-host, how are you doing?
Awesome. Good to be with you, Alfred.
Good to be with you too.
Yeah, my name is Melissa Olson. I'm a volunteer programmer here at KFAI and I will be here for the afternoon as your co-host today. How are you doing, Alfred? How are things? What's going on?
I'm doing well. I am transitioning into the life of a stay-at-home professional from being an essential worker a couple of weeks ago. So that's
yeah. And how does that feel?
It's been very interesting. It's been really nice to be able to go to bed at the end of the day without feeling exhausted. And that was that was my life for about 6 weeks.
Yeah, that is really real.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that you're able to stay at home. I'm glad that everybody that's joined us on our call today is able to be at home. And if you're out there listening and you are at work, we sure hope that you're staying safe. And we hope that you have a safe place to be when you are at home. As Alfred mentioned, we are doing some special programming in honor and observance of American Indian Month 2020 here on KFAI. You know, KFAI has been on the air for 42 years as of this past May 1st. And for most, if not all of those years, KFAI has offered special programming for American Indian Month. And May is the month that we observe American Indian Month. Usually, you know, it's done in November nationally, but it's been here observed in the month of May for the past 51 years, starting way back when there was like one day in May, and then it turned into a week. And now it's a full month. So, you know, another 50 years, we might be celebrating a whole year. Who knows? And one of the things that has happened, of course, Alfred, as you know, and as you just mentioned, things have been shifting. You know, we're working as an essential worker, and now you're a stay-at-home professional. One of the things that's happened is that much of the programming that has taken place in the community has been canceled, obviously due to the precautions necessary to slow the spread of COVID-19. And KFAI has really just stepped up and said, we would like to do a lot of programming here for American Indian Month on air. And we asked the community what kinds of things they wanted to talk about. And of course, one of the big things that the community and different community members from all across the community said, we really want to talk about census and census mobilization and what it's going to take to get community members really to respond to the census. So we've got some great guests with us here on Zoom. And I just want to start by checking in. I'm going to introduce a few people. And again, Alfred, we sort of can't see you. You look like sort of this anonymous outline. So, you know, we'll wave or something. But we can see Jeff Mattson, who's with us. He coordinates the Community Geographic Information Systems program at CURA at the University of Minnesota. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Melissa. Happy to be here.
Awesome. And we have with us Jolene Jones, who is a community organizer extraordinaire, who lives here in the community. She is on staff at the Native American Community Development Institute. Hi, Jolene.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, bonjour. And we have, I'm looking for my information, Alicia Gailhart, who is Red Lake Nation Director of Economic Development and Planning. Bonjour, Alicia.
Hello, Anin.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, good. And how is everybody? Let's start off talking a little bit with Jeff. Jeff, how are you doing? How is sort of all of the stay at home? How is that going for you?
Yeah, it's going pretty well so far. We've had to obviously shift to work from home, but thankfully with the technology we have access to today, we're able to get at all of the, you know, the data and the software and the programming that we need to do our work. It's hard not being able to go out and meet with people face to face, which is so much of the work that we do. But we're managing to keep going.
That's awesome. And again, this part of the hour, we're really going to be talking about Census 2020, the importance of the response to our census for American Indian communities across Minnesota, and of course, hyper-locally here in Minneapolis, where there's a large urban Native community. Jeff, I wanted to start a little bit with you. You coordinate the Community Geographic Information System. Can you explain to listeners a little bit about what precisely you do in your role?
Sure, absolutely. So as part of the university's engagement mission, my department, CURA, has been around for about 50 years, and we provide a number of resources for the broader community, among these being community-initiated, student-led research projects and a number of technical assistance initiatives. And one of those is our community GIS group. And so we operate as kind of a walk-in help desk center for the nonprofit community statewide. We provide that assistance mainly in the form of mapping, data analysis, and training for any nonprofit organization in the state.
That's awesome. One of the cool things that I was one of the cool things I found, I think on the UROC site, which is part of the university's system. It's a center over in North Minneapolis. And I was on the UROC site and I came across these great maps. And they are maps that you helped develop there at CURA. And they really describe, you know, the response to census, like neighborhood by neighborhood. Can you help describe for listeners what the maps are, what they look like a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Census Bureau has a website that they're updating daily that's showing the response as it's happening, you know, almost live. And well, that's a great resource for seeing how much better Minnesota is doing than the rest of the country, which of course we are. It's not very good for looking at really hyper-local kind of neighborhood level response rates, which is what we're really interested in. You know, I don't think too many of us know what census tract we live in, but a lot of us, most of us know what neighborhood we live in and can find that on a map. So we did a very neighborhood-specific take on the census's self-response map. Allows you to zoom in to any neighborhood in Minneapolis, click on that neighborhood or even sub-neighborhood and see how your community is doing in terms of the response thus far. We're updating it about once a week, and we're also giving users the ability to see how that response rate has changed over time to do some comparisons.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me, how do you envision the maps helping census workers and organizations make sense of the data and therefore sort of do better work in terms of their work on the ground, trying to get folks to fill out the census?
Sure. I think, you know, the biggest thing is first of all, we can see where people are and are not filling out their census forms. It's some of the higher income neighborhoods in Southwest and Northeast Minneapolis, kind of the neighborhoods that have the highest percentages of homeownership rates are doing quite well, way ahead of the curve. But we also see some of the neighborhoods that are lagging behind. So we see neighborhoods with large rental household populations, high immigrant communities, and even areas around the university where all of these students that would normally be here this time of year and be counted in Minneapolis are now away from their residences. And so those areas are falling behind. So it's really a tool to kind of be able to really specifically target outreach is how we're seeing it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we can do, Jolene Jones is here with us in Minneapolis. I can see her on the Zoom. Folks can't see her at home, but she is actually in South Minneapolis, I believe, in the Phillips neighborhood. And one of the things that I did in preparation for our Zoom call today on air was to go and use your tool, Jeff, to look a little bit about, to look at the East Phillips community and to try and understand what the census response is in the East Phillips community. Would you happen to have your tool pulled up, the maps pulled up in front of you, Jeff?
I do, absolutely.
And can you tell us a little bit about what the data looks like there in the East Phillips community where Jolene is zooming in from?
Sure, I can. So right now, just as a point of comparison, in the city of Minneapolis, about 66% of households have completed their census forms. In East Phillips, that number is only about 46%, so about 20 percentage points behind the city average. And one of the other things that this tool tells us is how many people are responding by internet. For the first time, the 2020 census has an internet response option that they are hoping to help in with reduced costs and make it more efficient and easier for people to respond. But only about 40% of the households in East Phillips have responded by internet. And so we see that we still have about 700 households that are still need to be counted just in that one neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And I wanna, Jeff, are you able to sort of stick and stay with us for a little bit as we talk a little bit about the map and what's going on in the East Phillips neighborhood?
Sure, absolutely.
Awesome. So, and again, we have Jolene Jones with us here. She is a community organizer extraordinaire from Native American Community Development Institute. Jolene is, you know, she works on so many important issues in our community. Jolene, you know, it's tough, right? Getting community folks to really take the census seriously, to take that time a little bit. It looks like there's been a pretty good response rate, but what are some of the challenges you're facing in your work trying to build that trust with community members and have them fill out the census?
Well, one of the things is the fact that it's internet accessible right now, and a lot of our households ain't responding because they don't have that access.
Yeah.
Don't have that privilege to have Wi-Fi and internet in all of our households. Another thing is language barriers. East Phillips is a very diverse neighborhood, very diverse neighborhood. The mm-hmm. census only comes in English and Spanish. We have a Somalian community. We have East Africans. We have major diversity in this community. Nowhere else is it like this. But for us personally, for the American Indian community, what brings it hard is the trust level with the government. You can sit there and tell somebody online a million times that it's not going to be used against them. It's better when you can do person to person. It's very hard to do that right now with COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about building trust. A lot of our elders are paranoid about doing the census. They don't want to do the census because they feel that it'll be used against them somehow. You know, they talk about historical trauma in the boarding schools. You know, that's not so historical. It happened in our lifetime. You're still alive. That's a trauma that exists right now. It may be historical for some, but for others, it's not. This went on in my lifetime. So our people don't want to say how many kids they have in their household because they don't want the government to come take a couple. So we face barriers along the way. Mm-hmm. And the only way we can overcome them barriers is just to keep telling our people the census matters for us. We have to show them that we are still here. Check that one box only. Head of household is very important to be Native American. And check one box only.
When you say check one box only, can you tell me a little bit more about that? Why is that so important?
It's so important because when they did the census 10 years ago, they had a new category that was called mixed race. So if you checked, you were American Indian and Hispanic, or American Indian and white, American Indian and African American, them funds for the for them people dropped into the mixed race category. And none of us have really figured out where that funding goes yet. It didn't come to the Indian community. American Indian OIC alone lost $600,000. Mm-hmm. Can't do programming for a community when you're not getting dollars. So we can't figure out where that money went. So mm-hmm. we told our community members they need to check that they're American Indian only. That way there we get the money. Mm-hmm. Or if you're Hispanic, check Mexican only, check African American only, to make sure that the people who serve you in your community get them dollars.
Mm-hmm. And that's really important. So when people fill out the census, community organizations are able to use that data to effectively gather more funding for the work that they do. And that's what happens, I think, at Native American Community Development Institute. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's the Workforce Investment and Opportunities Act that comes from the federal government, that's based on the census, based on numbers. That's part of the money OIC gets. I believe like 166 urban organizations get that money, and so do about 466 on tribal lands. If we're not being counted, them dollars drop. Mm-hmm. And then we have people who are going in and we don't have enough dollars to serve our communities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so important.
Absolutely. I want to come back, to something Jeff raised. So there's about 42% response rate right now. It looks like right there in East Phillips. Jeff, before we let you go, and we're so thankful for having you join us this afternoon, and you're certainly welcome to stay for the hour if you want. Can you tell us where we go to find that map that Kira has created?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say start just by going to our website, Kura, CURA.UMN.edu. The first item under our news and notes section is a link to the maps, and we have them available both for Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I will be updating them again probably on Tuesday.
That's great. And it's so great, that you're able to find ways during the pandemic to sort of shift, and we sure appreciate you coming on to our program this afternoon. And again, if you want us to hang out with us, we're more than happy to have you, join in on this conversation. I wanted to now introduce Alicia Gelhart, who is joining us from, Alicia, where are you joining us from? I'm not sure if you're in Minneapolis or if you're all the way up in Red Lake.
No, and actually I'll throw another one in the curb. So I'm actually in Kellyer, near reservation town. This is where my family lives. So this is where we've been all the last few weeks, a couple months, actually, I guess. It's weird how fast it flies.
And it looks like you're safely tucked away at home. How's that going for you?
It's going good. Yeah, I think it helps having a dog. He keeps us active. So we're always kind of trying to walk him and everything. And luckily we do have some green space. So we're able to plant a garden, a very large garden this year. So that should keep us pretty busy.
That's awesome. And of course, you are doing some work for Red Lake Nation for the 2020 census. Can you talk about why the 2020 census is so important in the community that you work for?
Yeah, so I'm working with our Red Lake Complete Count Committee. So we've been really trying to push a lot of the self-response. It's important, as Jolene had mentioned earlier, if you don't get properly counted, the funding doesn't come through. And I think another important point to note is that if we're not accurately counted, we could be considered statistically insignificant for different legislative actions. So it's also important to make sure that we're equally at the table whenever major decisions are being made that would impact our communities as well. So that's kind of some of the importance, I guess, why we're really concerned about the census this go around.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I live here in Minneapolis, right? And I, you know, I know about the organizations that Jolene is talking about. The American Indian OIC has long done jobs and training. There's a high school located in that building. I've known people who've gone up, you know, gone there over the years to find work. Can you tell me a little, and I know they count the, they use the census, you know, to gather funding for the work that they do. How does that happen all the way up in north, northwestern Minnesota where Red Lake is? So how is Red Lake using the census to help the community?
Yeah, so for us, it does impact a lot of the federal funds that are distributed to the different tribal nations. They utilize census data in a lot of those formulas. So it's really important for us. I think arguably one of our most important factors that it impacts is housing dollars. I'm sure you guys are aware of this because it exists in Minneapolis too. There's a lot of overcrowding and it's really difficult to access adequate housing for a lot of Native American families and quality housing at that too. So, you know, to make sure that we have enough stock coming in or being developed or redeveloped or rehabbed, you know, those dollars can go a long way. So I would say housing is probably one of our most important factors, but then we also have a lot of funding that comes into our school systems as well. So we've seen a lot of construction happening with our various school buildings in the Red Lake School District. And I mean, all of that gets impacted obviously by the census. So where those dollars go or where the people are at.
Yeah. Alfred, I want to ask you, you know, I'm a city person, right? I live here in Minneapolis, have for a long time. My family has been in Minneapolis for like three generations. And that's a, I don't know, that's something I'm proud of. So when I think about the census, I really tend to, you know, be very Minneapolis centric. And you, of course, also live here in Minneapolis, but I'm wondering if you have a hot take on the challenges around the census, given your own, you know, your experience having moved here. Could you tell us a little bit about where you're from?
Yeah. As well? Yeah. So I'm originally from Rosebud, the Rosebud Sioux tribe out in Rosebud, South Dakota. And as Jolene had alluded to, there is a lot of trust that does not happen within tribal communities and indigenous communities out in the in the world in general, and particularly now, given COVID-19, I think we all kind of, if we haven't been paying attention in South Dakota, the tribes have taken some pretty drastic measures to kind of seal their borders. I know the Oglala Sioux tribe in Pine Ridge and Standing Rock, Cheyenne River, has taken some measures to seal their borders. And now the governor of South Dakota has given the tribes 48 hours to open up the roads again, because that the South Dakota governor made national headlines by refusing to kind of issue a stay-at-home order and just has adopted a wait-and-see attitude. So the tribes are really, again, this highlights a lot of disparity and a lot of trust building that breaks down between governments and tribal nations. And the important thing to remember, right, is that tribal communities are political entities first. Right, we have been recognized in the Constitution as sovereign nations, as tribal nations. And so when the average person, the average American hears the issues happening within tribal communities, their first instinct is to think of it as a racial issue, which it is, to be sure. And the second part is that there are real political ramifications to how this breaks out. So yeah, I think in terms of census, I worked for my tribe for about 3 years, and the biggest disparity was trying to build that trust between indigenous folks and the government, any government really.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, you know, I think back when I was a teenager, my grandpa lived in the high rises over on Franklin and 17th, and it must have been right around the 1990 census. it had come up. I was a teenager, and all I remember him really saying was, you know, oh no, I don't fill out the census. I just don't want them to know where I live.
Yeah.
And, you know, it stuck with me, and I thought, oh, okay, he really must have good reason to feel that way. And of course, this goes back to what Jolene was saying. My grandfather was a boarding school survivor, had went to both Siston Wapton boarding school and then another sort of day school where they lived in White Earth. And so, Jolene, I want to talk a little bit about sort of the challenges, too, of now that it's even harder to build those relationships in light of the fact that we can't meet person to person. What are some of the things that you and your team have been doing to overcome some of the barriers that have sort of risen up around the pandemic?
Well, one of the things we've done is we've run contests. Like if you fill out your census and you show us, you can win a pair of beaded earrings. We've done pop sockets. We've done lighter leashes. Right now, we're currently doing shirts that say, either I'm Anishinaabe, I'm Lakota, I'm Dakota, I count. You know, we're doing drawings for them. This coming week, we'll be doing a special where we're going to have, they can win a shirt by making a video of themselves saying they did their census and why, and putting it on their own Facebook. So they can, so hopefully that will encourage their friends to do the census also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And why it's so important.
Mm-hmm. Alicia, I see you nodding your head. It looks like, you know, you were really agreeing with what Jolene was saying there in terms of, you know, getting creative to get folks involved. Is that true for you in Red Lake?
Yeah, I'm actually taking some notes too, because I like that idea of the doing a video and posting it on your own Facebook. I feel like that's kind of the great thing about, you know, trying to encourage response. Like there's all these great ideas coming out. And so we're, you know, really trying to see what works best in our own communities too. I know we just did a Facebook challenge too, where if somebody submitted kind of that last page of the questionnaire and sent it directly to us, you know, like feel free to black out your information. Like we don't necessarily need that. We trust you. And we've even had people write in just saying, yeah, we did our census and we get them entered for some different prizes as well. So
mm-hmm.
It's encouraging to see the numbers going up. So we're kind of facing that.
Jeff, I want to ask you, we had talked a little bit about the tool that Kira has developed to track census response neighborhood by neighborhood here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Do you know of a similar tool that is being used statewide to track census response?
I haven't seen a statewide tool at this point. I've seen one, Hennepin County has one. I've kind of unofficially made an offer to build ones for other sites. You can always use the one at the Census Bureau. You know, yeah. If you're looking at larger geographic areas like counties, it's pretty good. So I would recommend that. And we've got a link. If you look at our mapping tool, we also provide a link to the one that the Census Bureau is doing.
Yeah, and Jeff, let me ask you, you know, we've heard both Jolene and Alfred and Alicia talk about, you know, trust being so key. You're in a research institution, obviously. What does that mean to you to be able to build trust with communities?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's critical to everything we do. All of the projects we undertake are initiated by community, and we put them at the front and center of all of our research. We're not one of these traditional university centers that kind of parachutes in and extracts knowledge from a neighborhood or a group of people. We try to work with them to both develop the research questions as well as trying to figure out how that research will be used to benefit the local communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I came upon the tool, I was like, okay, it's something I can kind of, you know, have a little bit of fun with here at home. But again, to Jolene's point, you know, I have the benefit of being here at home, and I have a laptop computer, and I have, you know, a little bit of time. I don't know about a whole lot of time, but a little bit of time. to be able to do some of that exploring. Jolene, when you are out in community and talking with folks about the census, you know, and people don't have a laptop, you know, how do you help them overcome that, especially when like our public libraries are closed and all of these usual ways we might access the internet are no longer there?
Well, we've also offered prizes to the teenagers to help their grandparents and help their households to do the census. A lot of our young ones have phones, and it can be done on your phone. Mm-hmm. So we've encouraged them to participate and help their households, and we put them in the drawings also so that they can win prizes.
Even if they're like younger than 18 and they may not, you know, obviously be filling out head of household, but they have the access to their phone, right?
Yes, and they help their grandparents and their parents do it. They ask the questions and the parents tell them the answers and they get their census in.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I think growing up and hearing the stories of like my mom and other family members, I became what I would like to call an accidental storyteller. Do you find the youth then being able to sort of reflect back the fact that they've helped out in the community with filling out census forms?
Yes, I really encourage them. I really brag them up. These are our future leaders. They're learning to help their families. They're helping our community. They're helping all of us by doing it. And I make them feel good about it because they are doing a good thing. They are awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Alicia, you're in Red Lake, obviously. I wonder about the distance and some of the issues where, you know, if, again, you don't have access, you know, to a computer where you live, like in, let's say, Panema, way up, you know, on the northern part of the Red Lake Reservation. What are folks doing to be able to overcome some of the distances? You know, are they using their phones? Do they have a good Wi-Fi signal? What does that look like?
I think a lot of people are using their phones still. We've had some of our posts reach, you know, about 2,000 people or so, and we consider that pretty successful considering the fact there is still that restricted access to Wi-Fi. But I also think some of the public buildings are starting to open up a little bit more and allow Wi-Fi from their buildings. So I think our tribal college is still offering Wi-Fi so people can kind of park out there and do their census or do their schoolwork, that kind of stuff. I think we're trying to be as flexible as we can to get people access to the internet. It's just always one of those barriers though, you know, it's real and it happens across the state in different communities. And we certainly see it too. I think one of our biggest challenges though is a lot of the census materials are trying to be sent to physical addresses, and we have a very robust PO box system. It's pretty rare to see an actual mailbox. So a lot of those materials will get sent back. And so we kind of face that as an issue too. So it's like census isn't even reaching our communities unless it's from these different kind of engagements that we've had with, you know, prior to the pandemic or the declaring of a state of emergency or stay-at-home orders, any of these things. We've been trying to table as much as we can at different community events. And then we've also been, you know, trying to do these Facebook posts, but it all reaches the people who have access to Wi-Fi. So we're trying to get as creative as we can and just keep on pushing.
At the top of the hour, Alfred had mentioned the fact that there are checkpoints at different places in rural communities, rural reservation communities in South Dakota, on Rosebud, at Pine Ridge. Mm-hmm. Are there also checkpoints at Red Lake? What does that look like? Is Red Lake able to, you know, manage access to the reservation, to lands?
Yeah. So there's, checkpoints now entering the reservation, and access to the reservation is somewhat restricted. We're just trying to do our best to make sure that our communities are staying safe amongst this whole pandemic also. You know, we have, I'm sure it's the same as a lot of other tribal areas or rural areas, there's not a whole lot of infrastructure as far as hospital beds. And, you know, that's kind of been the whole message that we've heard across the state of Minnesota is, you know, we need to build up our infrastructure so that once this does peak, then we're able to combat it, you know, or be properly set up. And so we're kind of dealing with that too. And I really applaud all of our leadership for taking that stance and, you know, making sure that we do have the protection that we need for our community as well. And really kind of realizing that it does protect the whole surrounding area as well with, you know, some of that reduced contact.
Mm-hmm. That is a protection for everybody.
Yep.
Yeah. I want to ask Jolene, you know, given, I sort of want to flip this on its head a little bit too. Has the pandemic been, and the realities of what the pandemic is, right? Just how contagious it is and how lethal it is. Has that, have you heard anybody talk about like, yeah, we really need to get all of our resources marshaled. This is one more reason to fill out the census. Have you heard community members sort of talk about it in that way? Like, yeah, we gotta work harder now more than ever before.
Yes, and that's what we're talking about is, you know, if we're counted, we have more resources for when stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in our communities, if we're not counted, we're not going to have them. Well, I'm sorry, my brain just locked. The breathing machines, I can't think of what they're called.
Ventilators,
thank you. You know, we need to make sure that there's more for us also. We don't want to be last on the list for everything, which it seems like we are right now. You know, if we're counted and our numbers are accurate, we will move up higher. There are a lot of us, and we are very, very undercounted in this community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know 10 years ago, I can remember being at a meeting over at Native American Community Development Institute, and the former Hennepin County Commissioner had worked with Hennepin County social workers to make sure that social workers were not, you know, were instructed by their supervisors not to necessarily report when people were doubled up in their housing situations, just so it wouldn't mess with anybody's housing. Do you see some of those same kinds of actions being taken to safeguard the housing of folks over in the East Phillips neighborhood, particularly at Little Earth?
Yes, of course. You know, and we're telling our residents here at Little Earth that nobody has access to your information. Please believe us. Nobody has access to your information. Please count everybody in your house, everybody. And it is, it's about that trust issue again. It's about not trusting the government, about not wanting to lose your housing, especially in this day and age when housing is so hard to come by. So we just keep encouraging our residents to count everybody. We tell them, believe us, if anything happens, there'll be a lawyer to help you. You know, it's very important we count because one of the things that we haven't talked about, Melissa, mm-hmm. is the very fact that if we're not counted, we can lose who we are.
Hmm.
How many counts on our treaties. If we don't exist, our treaties don't exist. Our hunting and fishing rights don't exist. All of that becomes null and void. And then what happens to us? Hmm. We have to be counted.
Hmm. And is that something that you hear in Red Lake, Alicia, that the census is linked to treaty rights? To hunting and fishing rights?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously if we don't get counted, then we don't exist, right? Is that kind of the general theme here?
Oddly, I mean,
we don't want to be undercounted. We don't want people to not feel like they don't matter. We need to be counted, you know, and it does help protect the resources, natural and otherwise. If we have the accurate counts, obviously it impacts trillions of dollars of funding every single year. You know, if we have accurate counts, then we're going to be able to make sure that we can better provide for the resources that we have in the community that we live in. So I guess that's kind of my big spiel for it is, you know, make sure you get counted because it does impact the resources.
Mm-hmm. And I know if Red Lake Nation members are passionate about protecting their lake and about protecting their land. Mm-hmm. And it seemed, it, you know, to go to Jolene's point, this is an important tool in protecting the places as well as the people. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. I want to come back a little bit to where we started at the beginning of the conversation. Going forward, you know, the challenges remain largely the same. We're not able to gather in person. We're having to find new sort of online tools to figure all of this out. I want to ask all three of our guests, and Alfred, you jump in here too at a certain point. What does the next month look like for you in terms of what you're going to be focused on when it comes to engaging folks about the census? What's on your plate right now? What are you worried about? What helps you sleep at night? I'll start with Alfred. Is there something that you think about that's particularly salient at this time?
Yeah. So I have already done my census as soon as it got to me, and that's something that my family is. We're civically minded just because of my grandparents were born before the Indian Reorganization Act and the Indian Citizenship Act of 1924. So my grandparents were not considered citizens of this country. So it's been extremely important in my family that we do everything that we can to be counted. And so we've done that. The interesting thing, Jolene, I believe it's your niece, Cassie, is on our Facebook feed, and she's cheering you on. She brings up a good point. She says maybe this will lead our community members being more involved in who is running to represent us and represent ourselves. So that's another thing that's always at the top of my head is that, you know, who are we electing that will represent us? And, you know, we have made history in the state, you know, with Peggy Flanagan as the lieutenant governor and so many other Indigenous women, right, running and running successfully and not just running, but winning and governing successfully, right? Like Jamie Becker Finn and Mary Kunish Podine and all the, you know, like there are so many. And I think there's someone up in Moorhead who just got endorsed as well for her bid. The name escapes me, but so that's, you know, that's what's at the top of my head in terms of why the census is important, why, you know, why we need to continue to stand up and be counted and to use our voices every way we can.
I agree. I think it's very important that the census decides districting. Like I'm in the 9th ward. So when we did our census last time, they redistrict us and they actually had the district split in half, which actually split Little Earth in half, which was crazy. One half of us would have been in East Phillips and the other half would have been in the Stewart neighborhood. It's crazy how it would have been. So that's very important to the census, is being counted as how we district also.
And what would have happened if that had been split? What do you feel like the impact would have been? And why is it important for East Phillips, you know, for the community there at Little Earth to be in East Phillips?
It would have been crazy to split us in half, our community. Half of us would be eligible for these dollars. Half would be eligible for them dollars. We'd be voting in two different districts. It would have been crazy. I actually went to the city council to speak on it at that time. You can't divide a community that has one name and one funding, you know, through HUD, that you can't divide us in half. And that's the key too. And that's something we talk about to our residents, especially here at Little Earth, is that it's districting for the urban areas. It's districting.
Mm-hmm. So it impacts city council and city municipal government, as well as what happens at the state legislature.
Yes, it does. Yeah. It also affects our green zones, everything. You know, it affects our voting power too, you know?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. In the next hour, we are going to be talking about the Southside Green Zone and the environmental pollution that impacts where you live there in the East Phillips neighborhood. And I think a part of the reason we wanted to link these two conversations together around the census and environmental degradation is for this exact reason. Sounds like Little Earth, if it's unified, is able to respond as a unified community to some of those challenges.
Yes, we are. When our numbers are counted, and we have a bigger voice. if we can elect people who support our issues, support our children breathing clean air, support us having dollars to educate people, all of that comes from the census. All of that power comes from the census. Mm-hmm. And then it comes to us by voicing our opinions, speaking on our environment. As we move into the next hour, you know, we're going to address environmental racism, and Low Earth is right in the middle of it. We're right alongside of it. We faced over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But just some closing thoughts from you, Jeff, and from you, Alicia, where you are at in Red Lake. What's next for you as you sort of look forward at your work week or your work month around the census?
So I think for me, it's just continuing to get the word out. This conversation has really inspired me to try to share more broadly some of the things that we're doing and some of the things that we hear other people are doing. There's been a lot of talk about the dollars that are at stake for our local communities and also political representation. Minnesota is in serious danger of losing a seat in Congress if we don't come up with a big enough number. And that has repercussions, again, to money, to political power, and will probably most be affected by rural Minnesota if that happens, losing that seat. So very important that we keep up what we're doing and get that count as high as we can.
And tell us where we can find your tool again, Jeff.
Yep, at the CURA website. So CURA, CURA.umn.edu.
I want to thank you so much for coming on this afternoon. And Alicia, some final thoughts from you.
Yeah, I think I just want to say thanks to everyone who is here today, because I mean, I feel inspired as well. I'll echo Jeff's message there. Came away with some additional great ideas for promoting the census. And then, you know, we just want to make sure that everyone that we interact with knows the importance of the census. So for us, it's all about education and promotion and really making sure that we take ownership of the census, because it does impact us so heavily. So, you know, let's make this census ours, and let's make sure that people realize we're still here and we still count, and it impacts everything kind of that we do, because it impacts the funding and resources so heavily. So we want to make sure that, you know, check that one box. I'll echo what Jolene had mentioned earlier, you know, make sure you're checking one box only. I know another thing that we've been really pushing people to consider is for your tribal affiliation, make sure you're noting the tribe that you're enrolled with or most closely affiliated to. So make sure you're filling it out with the legal name. You know, we're Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians. If you can fill it out that way, that's great. So that's what I would like to say.
Thank you so much, Alicia, for coming on this afternoon. I want to echo that, you know, in addition to that, you know, checking that one box, Native folks write in the legal name of their tribe or the tribe they're most closely affiliated with. So important. Thank you for bringing that up. We are just a couple minutes to the top of the hour. So I just want to say thank you all for spending an hour with us on your Saturday. Thank you so much. And I certainly hope you are all safe and well at home. And for our communities out there listening, if you can't be at home, we hope you can be safe.